and welcome to this special episode. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's great to have you company. Just before we wrap up for the Christmas break, we are proud to announce that Talking Trading has reached its 50th episode. Celebrate our inaugural year of share market news, special guest appearances, mind power motivation. We take a look at some of the highlights of 2014. And as this is the final episode for this year, Chris Tate walks us through the major events of the market over the past 12 months and tells us what to do with your positions over Christmas. It's some critical advice. Stay tuned. There's a lot to listen to today. Chris Tate, hello and welcome.
Hi, Caroline.
By starting our year in review, let's start by looking at the US markets. What were some of the highlights of 2014?
The US is intriguing because it's continued this multi-year bull run that it started post-GFC. Of course, years always begin when you've got a market that's been going up for several years in a row. You always get the naysayers come out. And so the year began with a plethora of predictions that the US market would collapse anywhere between 2 and 40%. And in fact, it did the actual opposite. And as of what, last Friday, it's up about 9.5%, 10% if you look at the Dow. The NASDAQ 100 is up about 17%. So it's done precisely the reverse. Last year was a huge year for IPOs in the US. They had about 288, raising some staggering amounts of capital. So for them, it's actually been a buoyant year. Although intriguingly, there has been, over the past few years, there's actually been a decline in volume or trading volume on the Dow. And I think in many ways that's a function of the growth in the trading of EFTs, these listed funds. And the market just kept moving to new highs, which is in complete contrast to us, where we began the year at about 53, 52, and it looks like we will end the year somewhere near 53, 52, continuing on that long tradition that the Australian market has of profound mediocrity.
What were some of the highlights and events of 2014 in the Australian markets?
We had a real slowing. In part of our market is driven by the top 20. They seem to just be grinding away at present. The difficulty we face is that our market, in essence, is built up of two components, and only two components. So in terms of the heavyweights, we have banks and we have miners. The mining infrastructure boom, because we didn't actually have a mining boom or a commodities boom, is well and truly gone. Banks continue to make money because there's only four of them, so each one takes a cut of putting their hand in your pocket. Unless something changes there, we won't get any sort of movement. The intriguing thing is, one of the best performing markets of this year is actually the Shanghai Composite. Flat all year, up about 38% all of a sudden. That's not flowing through to us at all.
Okay, let's just go back to the commodities in the Australian market. Crude, silver and gold, what did they do this year?
This is where we've really suffered. Crude has fallen out of bed. The intriguing thing is that in part, what you have is effectively a pissing contest going on between the Saudis and the US. The US is now a net oil exporter for the first time in, I think actually the first time ever. And this has come about because of new technology with shale oils. It's enabling them to extract oil at a phenomenal rate. And it was thought that the Saudis would take their foot off the gas and not continue, if you pardon the poor pun, to flood the market with oil. They haven't done that. They've just kept pumping at the same rate. So you do have this competition between the US and the Saudis. But I think the bigger point for crude, particularly from the point of view of the Saudis, is that Saudi Arabia sits at the epicenter of a region of absolute lunatics. And the Saudi royal family clings to power, so they have to keep pumping. They have to keep generating money. And the problem with that is that as you push oil towards $50 a barrel, everybody becomes uneconomic. The issue we have is the wider issue of commodity prices. Commodity prices, to use a technical term, have been stuffed all year. There does seem to be, at the time of us speaking, a little bit of a floor in gold and a little bit of a floor in silver.
Okay, let's jump over to the Asian markets. How did they perform?
In terms of Asia, Asia is intriguing in that markets are forward pricing, they're forward thinking. So obviously, all of a sudden, something has occurred in China that's causing their forward thinking to change, in that the Shanghai Composite has leapt. Strangely enough, probably the best performing market of this year will end up being the Bombay Stock Exchange out of India, which is an intriguing thing in and of itself that a third world country could have an exchange that does so well. But in terms of the other big players in Asia, the Nikkei will finish the year, it looks at this point up, you know, between 5 and 7%, somewhere in that range. The Hang Seng will probably end the year having gone nowhere. There have been trading opportunities in between, particularly as a result of the student unrest and that trying to mesh two completely different cultures.
Russia?
Russia. Well,
Russia and the Ukraine.
The less said about the Russians, the better. one of their issues is they're resource dependent like us. So in that respect, their economy is unsophisticated like ours. Theirs is a dig it up and sell it mentality, much like ours is. The collapse in the price of oil is causing them enormous pain, and that will continue to be a problem.
Europe.
The problem for Europe is that it still faces the carryover from the GFC and the debt issues that groups like Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, Spain experienced, and they're still struggling with that. Their markets this year have gone nowhere. And until there is a change in sentiment, until something happens, it's hard to envisage a change in sentiment for them. The CAC, the DAX, the FTSE 100, the Euro Stoxx 50, they will finish probably moderately off the pace. I mean, there have been trading opportunities in there for those who are short and sharp. But for the longer-term investor or position holder, life's actually quite hard. And it's been quite hard in all markets outside of the US.
Okay, over Christmas, what should traders be doing with their positions?
That's actually a very good question, one I've been mulling over the weekend, simply because I've got a series of signals that have been generated, and some of those are options trades. So I've been mulling over what to do with them. There are two sort of counterpoints to this. The first is that as we head into the holiday season, volumes drop off. As volumes drop off, price discovery becomes a little bit more erratic, which means volatility might become a little bit more erratic. The counterpoint to that, though, is that all world markets except Australia only take the public holidays. So the US takes Christmas Day, Boxing Day, then they're back into it, then New Year's Day, and then they're just back into it again. Here in the land of the eternal long weekend, our markets begin to shut down about now and don't really start to motor again until mid-Feb. And being a finance industry, they don't really start to kick off until private schools come back and all the overly paid individuals in the market come back from their holiday destination. So we have almost like a four-week, five-week break. Mm-hmm. For me, the problem's quite easy to solve. My options positions are overseas, so I will take them but stop taking positions as of the end of this week. All my positions are covered by stops. Many, many, many of those are guaranteed, so I can just leave those with impunity and simply forget about it. The question is, do you take new positions? My personal rule is I don't actually take any new positions between the end of this week and the end of this calendar year, and then slowly wind back into it in the first and second week. So that's the way I try and solve this problem. Many people just simply put in a blanket rule, which is equally valid, that says, right, come the middle of December, I stop. Come the middle of January, I start. Anything that's left over during that period is covered by stops. I don't do anything new. And that's equally valid. I suppose the central question is, how well do you sleep at night when you're away on holiday? If you can't sleep at night, then the position needs to go. If you can sleep at night, then the position's quite reasonable and fine as it is. So it's all the can you sleep at night test.
Your personal best moment in the markets this year?
Probably going short the Aussie dollar when she broke down from 94.92. That got my attention. That, and I was fortunate enough to be sitting in front of the screen when the Hang Seng began to break down with student protests. So caught that as well. And this is the intriguing thing about trading that's very hard to get across to people who don't trade is that the majority of money you make during a year can come from one or two trades. And that's very hard to get across to people. And I think that's a throwback to the Protestant work ethic that I'm working, therefore I need to be rewarded on a regular basis. For those of us who don't have that, you accept the fact that you can go for most of the year and be flat, and then all the money comes in a rush in a handful of trades, and you have to be awake enough to realize that that is your very nuanced trading universe, and so therefore you actually have to take advantage of those when they occur.
How do you stay awake?
Hard part for me is actually going to sleep.
Piece of advice for traders over Christmas.
Look, you need to find your own point at which you are comfortable leaving the market. One of the things that people need to understand is that despite our own egos, the market will still be there when you get back, and it will go its own course without you in it. The issue is markets have been doing their thing now for a very, very long time. They'll continue to do their thing long after we've left them. It's simply a matter of accepting that with your own ego.
And on that very positive note, Chris Tate, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Caroline.
And Chris, thank you for all your time this year with Talking Trading, all your support and all your wisdom.
Thank you.
Sick of being the smartest person in the room? Tell your friends about the Talking Trading podcast and let them come to the party too. TalkingTrading.com.au. Since Talking Trading's inception in December last year, we've heard a plethora of experts share their business experience and wisdom. We take a trip down memory lane now to look at the highlights of 2014. To kick off the year, we started with Chris Tate.
The great successful traders have learned how to perform one action and one action very, very well. And that action is quite simply this. They are pigs. When something is moving in their direction, that is, they've got a position and it's moving, they continue to buy more and more and more and more and more, and they keep going until it ends.
David Chia.
One of the worst enemies of trading is for people to focus too short-term. Too short-term as in you're reading the news and you're jumping at every bit of news that comes out. And when you are following your game plan, as long as you have a reasonable enough time frame where you're allowing your trades to sit for a few weeks, not necessarily just a few hours. And I know there's nothing wrong with that. Some people want to trade intraday, but you end up doing a lot of activity and jumping at unnecessary shadows. That is something I've definitely learned over 30 years of trading, that it's too easy to be spooked by the shadows and the noise in the short term. So focus on your game plan and don't worry too much about the day-to-day news.
Jason Cunningham.
In my history of being an accountant, I've been in this business 16 and a half years. And I've been acting for traders since 1999. We found that those that are successful at trading are the ones that follow their plan verbatim. All the facets of the plan. Firstly and foremost, looking at the trend and understanding that, you know, the trend is your friend, and therefore trading the trend. If the trend's not there, they don't trade. But also making sure the position size is correct, not having too many open trades at the one time, entering at the right time, exiting at the right time. But those that didn't make money broke one of those five rules.
Gary Stone.
A professional is somebody who is outperforming the market, not necessarily every single day or week or month, but somebody who is consistent, objective, feels comfortable with the edge that they are, they're executing, they have a purpose, they have a written plan, they've discovered certain principles in the market that they use in their process, they have passion, they've done their preparation, being researched, and I've spoken about research of an edge. They've taken all of that preparation, passion, principles, planning, and purpose and put it into a process. And effectively what they do is they focus on executing the process flawlessly. Don't knee-jerk react to short-term negative feedback or short-term down periods in the market. They plow through.
Dr. Harry Stanton.
One of the things I believe is remaking the event, for example. When you do something and you know you've really messed it up, one of the things I suggest people do is put themselves into a nice, relaxed state, and the easiest way of doing that is just watching their breath, and then to almost to say you've got a blackboard in your mind wiping the mistake off and half a dozen times replaying it the way you wish you had have done it. I think that's a very simple technique which works really well. And if you've done something really well, that you've followed all the rules, got a really good trading result and so on, it's a good idea to think about that half a dozen times, replay it again in your mind. I think we do far too little of praising ourselves for doing something right.
Dawn Bolton-Smith.
Well, basically, I mean, use much the same technical tools as I did when I started out, and I still find that the basic charts are the best and the simplest to analyse. In recent years, they've devised all these wonderful technical trading systems, MACDs, RSIs, stochastics. They're okay, but they're lagging. The price is your leading indicator.
Alan Furlong.
What is your meaning and purpose? So the number one is get clear on your meaning and purpose. And the easiest way to do that, because lots of people will tell you lots of different things, is, well, what do you stand for in life? What are your values? The moment you get clear on your values is the moment that you're able to, you know, harness this model and achieve greater success. So my number one value is providing for my family more than anything else. Mm. And I have been through hell and back. But the reason I'm able to do that, you know, and to cope with the dance, which is I'm dead clear on my values.
Dr. Tim Pitchell.
You know, for me, procrastination is a deeply existential issue. Just a few days ago, my wife came home from a store and she'd bought me this, I don't know what you'd call it. It's not a plaque, but it's a wooden, it's just a piece of wood that has carved letters on it. So you can imagine you'd sit it on your desk and it says simply, live now, procrastinate later. And I love it. I love it because it captures what I think is the heart of procrastination. Procrastination is not just a matter of undermining our performance. It's that we're not getting on with life itself, right? Live now, procrastinate later.
Rick Schnabel.
How do we become a money magnet? Whoa. Become insatiably in love with the idea of growing our money and asking it to invite its friends to come too and play. You know, the more we play with money, the more we create. The more we create opportunities for others. You know, it's an energy. You know, get in love with the energy of money. That's a good thing.
Steve Nissen.
A lot of the psychological concepts that they used for trading rice futures in the 17th century eventually incorporated themselves into the candlestick patterns and analysis that the Japanese evolved when the Japanese stock market began in the 1870s. The way I uncovered them in the 1980s is there was a 1 or 2 page article I saw written in English about candlesticks, and that really piqued my interest. And then down the hall from me when I was working at one of the brokerage firms, there was a Japanese trader, and she said, oh, yeah, they use candlesticks all the time. So I found an American who was going to Japan, and I told him to buy every book he could on candlesticks.
Daryl Guppy.
Volatility has been driven by two important changes that have taken place since 2008. The first is exchange trade fund trading, and the second is high frequency trading. Now, we think that HFT is not really relevant to the retail trader, but in fact, it is. ETFs. They're popular because retail traders are terrified of the market. You look at some of these stocks, they drop like a stone. This is what really terrifies the retail investor or the retail trader. So what we're finding is rather than coming into the market as individual traders, they're coming into the market via ETFs. So instead of taking on individual stock risk, you're taking on the risk of the entire market. And that's much easier and much more comfortable.
Paul McGee.
I think sometimes we need to shut up our moaning about things that aren't going to change and accept it and deal with it. I think we need to sometimes shut up our excuses and take responsibility. We've got one shot at this life, so let's make the most of it. And also shut up that voice of self-doubt that tells us why we can't do it and just move on with a little bit more self-belief. I think so. One of the questions I often ask people is, you know, besides God, if you believe in God, who is perhaps the most important person you're ever going to talk to? And ultimately, that most important person you're going to talk to is actually yourself. And I think some of our internal conversations don't work to such an extent that I think what I call faulty thinking can actually increase your anxiety and your stress and can decrease your confidence and your motivation.
Wayne Berry.
Well, look, I think the best motivation is success. It's often said nothing breeds success like success, and I think that's true. And you've got to look at, well, how do we create success in our life? And it's our actions that actually create our success. So I think successful people do things, take action, regardless of how they feel, while average people are waiting around until they feel like taking action.
and Louise Bedford.
On your deathbed, you'll have regrets. You'll wish you'd have played more. You'll wish that you'd spent time with friends and family. But I'll bet that you'll wish you had have also taken more risks and created a life with more meaning. Your challenge is to think about what you really want in life. Is it just to exist, being a worker drone, having to achieve somebody else's goals and dreams? Or are you ready to move forward and trade your fears for peace, trade your anxiety for confidence? Imagine a life where you didn't have to worry whether you'd made the right stock choice, or wonder how much money to put into your next trade, or even when to exit your trade. Imagine a life where you didn't look enviously at their new car or house or holiday, and where you didn't have to put your plans on hold again, and where you didn't need to worry about what the future would bring for you. How good would that feel? And that is what trading can do for you.
Thank you for all your wonderful support, company, emails and feedback this year. Talking Trading was developed to offer traders and entrepreneurs a weekly hit of inspiration, and we hope we have assisted you in your journey towards trading greatness. I would personally like to give a very big thank you to Louise Bedford, whose energy, support and dynamism are a guiding light in many people's lives. Louise's purpose and joy comes from seeing traders she has mentored crack the markets and live financially free lives. And we hope because of this show that you are one or two steps closer to achieving that. I hope Santa and the reindeers bring you and your families a wonderful Christmas. We will be back on the airwaves on January 21st. Already we have loads of international guests lined up for next year, including the body language man, Alan Peace, funny woman and speaker, Amanda Gore, the ex-translator to the Dalai Lama comes on board, and the man who was handpicked by Richard Branson to lead Virgin USA, Phil Quartararo, joins us, and loads more. On behalf of the team here, we look forward to your company next year. Have a wonderful Christmas and Happy New Year.
Talking Trading is sponsored by TradingGang.com.au and The Mentor Program. The Mentor Program has been running continuously since the year 2000 and is a six-month, repeat-for-free course run by Chris Tate and Louise Bedford. Make sure you're registered on TradingGang.com.au to hear more.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.